Hello and welcome to the Vancouver Tech Podcast. My name is James.
And I'm Drew. Welcome to another episode.
Dun 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 dun
dun dun dun dun dun.
Meetups around town.
Yeah.
Awesome. We have a pretty busy week. First, we're going to talk about last week. If you're new here, we usually talk about last week and talk about next week. I think we have a lot of new people actually listening.
Yeah, I guess we do. So basically, we're going to go over a little bit of a review of last week's meetups and tech events, what happened, how it was, and what's coming up over the next week.
Let's start with the first one.
All right. So last week, we had Monday was a pretty busy day, wasn't it, James?
Yeah, it was.
What were some of the events that were happening?
Well, you went to the Data Science Social, right?
I didn't make it out to the Data Science Social. I did make it to two other meetups, though.
Okay. Yeah, Data Science Social. I didn't make it either, but maybe next time.
Yeah, there were really, I think there were actually like four or five overlapping. We didn't cover all of them, but the Data Science Social that was happening at St. Regis, if you were there, let us know how it was. It was probably pretty awesome. That was their last meetup of the year, I believe. So we'll try and check it out next year. Also on the same Monday, Unbounce hosted the, the Functional Programmers meetup. I only got to see a little bit of that. I think it was Jen Cooper was talking about monads, and she gave some pretty interesting examples in Ruby using blocks and stuff, and it was pretty cool. It was well presented, I thought. Definitely well prepared. I'd really like to take a look at those notes. I didn't see the following speaker because I had to prepare for the next meetup, where I believe I saw you, James.
Yes, you saw me at HackerNest.
HackerNest! And that was a pretty fun one. Also, the last one of the year.
Yeah.
We had that at Mogo, and we had some pretty good beer. Do you remember the beer?
Yeah, it was awesome. I think I tried them all. That dark beer was like, when I saw them, like, they reminded me of Guinness. It was so dark.
Yeah, well, it was an oatmeal stout.
Yeah.
Pretty smooth compared to how it looked.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we had an IPA, we had the black oatmeal stout, and we had one other, which was a pale ale.
Yeah, I think I had a couple of the IPAs. Yeah. What was the beer company?
That was Black Kettle Brewing over in North Vancouver, and they did an awesome job of helping us out. We actually have two kegs of theirs on tap at the Mogo offices now. So that was fun. And that was our Monday night.
Yeah, Monday night was fun.
It really was. Tuesday, what happened?
Tuesday, Polyglot Social and the Public Cloud User Group. So,
oh, that's right. So Tuesday, that we went from like Monday, boom, we're slammed with events, to Tuesday, bam, slammed with events. I hadn't realized during the day, and then last minute I was like, oh, SAP has their open house as well. So I ended up swinging by SAP's open house. They said they were hiring cloud engineers, and they must have had a couple hundred people there.
Oh, wow.
It was a pretty big open house. They were giving a presentation. I only stayed for about 15 or 20 minutes, just talked to a couple of people, had some of their snacks. They did a really good job of hosting from what I saw. The people were pretty friendly. I got the impression that they weren't looking for quote-unquote cloud engineers in the sense that I thought of what a cloud engineer was. But maybe, James, you can give me an idea of what you think of when you hear cloud engineer.
Cloud engineer. That just sounds like a fancy way to say like DevOps, or like a different way to say DevOps. And in what I would think of.
Interesting. So what's DevOps in your opinion?
I would say that would be managing your server environment and your actual development environment, making sure that there's tooling, making sure that there's, you know, scripts, making sure that there's rules to follow, making sure that, you know, if you're using tabs and not spaces, whatever your rules are, making sure those are all in place, as well as making sure that people are committing and making changes that are actually going to be good changes and not bad changes. Would you say something different?
Interesting. I've heard a lot of different things, and some people, I was actually having a conversation with somebody that I've been introduced to as kind of like a DevOps master and stuff. And his take was more that DevOps isn't exactly a role. It's more a philosophy or a way of doing things, and that everybody is DevOps. You know, DevOps is a way of development. It's kind of the evolution of, you know, we used to have the old school development methodologies. We'd have, you know, siloed departments, things like that. Whereas DevOps kind of opens things up. It's like this, like a cultural shift. And I think cloud engineering as well, it's a pretty misunderstood term. And it depends on who you're talking to. So I was thinking people who were developing cloud, so platforms for the cloud and infrastructure cloud.
Right.
But it seemed that they were talking about, they had an interesting in-house system called HANA, which I wasn't quite sure how it worked, but they said they had an in-memory relational database and some JavaScript stuff. And I kind of got the idea that this was more of an analytics kind of cloud-based tool,
right,
that they were looking for people to use that and kind of crunch data.
Okay, so they were looking for people that would be able to use this new tool that they made.
That's the sense I got. I don't know if it's new, but this in-house tool. That was the sense I got, and I talked to a couple of people. We might actually get their lead from HR on the show maybe February. We're kind of booked up for the next couple of months.
Yeah, that's true. Open Data, I went to this last minute on Wednesday. I saw it Wednesday morning. I was like, maybe I'll check this out.
Oh, sweet.
And I'd never been to any of the Open Data meetups before, and this one was awesome. It was their end of the year like holiday mixer, and they had this presentation. All these people presented. They gave out awards for people that were sort of, you know, advocates of the year and best idea of the year.
Nice.
It was really sweet, and I met some people from the BC Dev Exchange, which is this new initiative by City of Vancouver to implement open source in the city.
So as far as I know, the BC Dev Exchange was provincial.
Oh, sorry, yeah. BC Dev Exchange for the province to implement
and
open source.
It's been around for a little while. I noticed their GitHub repo or organization about a year ago, I'd like to say.
Yeah. They said that they basically started this thing. Like they said, they got on GitHub about a year ago. It's taken about a year to sort of get things going, convert the people you need to convert, right, in the bureaucracy that is the government. And they were saying that now that they're at that point, you're going to see stuff that they're going to start releasing in January. So we should see some stuff in January come out.
This is pretty cool. There was a meetup last year in the summer that happened a couple of times. It kind of got off the ground and nobody's really picked up the ball and organized anything since. But we had people from the BC Dev Exchange come out and give talks. And the gist of it was, they have all of this data. They have all this stuff on the government side. And they're not really sure what to open up and what to expose, how the APIs should look, and you know how the community is going to react or relate to that. And that was something we wanted to push as an initiative. Maybe sometime next year, the Code for Canada meetup will start up again and start doing that.
Yeah, that would be really cool. But yeah, met a bunch of people there. That was really fun.
Cool. So that was the Open Data Society of BC.
Yeah. There's going to be more, and we'll mention them when they come up. But yeah, the next one.
Awesome. Well, actually, back to Tuesday, there was also that Polyglot Social. I don't know if we mentioned that.
I didn't go.
You didn't go? Yeah, I didn't go either. I went to the public cloud user group after the SAP Social, open house. And that was really cool, by the way. The public cloud user group, if you haven't been, and if you do anything in and around the cloud, make sure to go and check that out. It's always well hosted and well presented. Kind of like a what's what in the cloud for the past month. Last time we did, the theme was DevOps for cloud. And the idea was, or the demo that was kind of given at the end there, was deploying to AWS versus deploying to Azure. And it was a WordPress app. So it was pretty straightforward. It was a few minutes for each of them. And obviously, you can dig all day, all week, all month into some of the tools out there.
You can definitely go down the rabbit hole with all that stuff. But yeah, Friday, last night, we'll record this on the weekend for people that don't know, but last night was the Wishpond open house.
It sure was, yeah. So that was pretty interesting. There were a lot of, these past couple of weeks, a lot of end of year, last of the year meetups, and this was the last one of the year for Wishpond. They had their open house. Jason Tam did a great job of organizing and hosting that. They had a ton of pizza and an okay beer selection.
Oh, sounds like someone got spoiled from the Hacker Nest.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, I'm a big advocate of local and local craft. And yeah, that's just my preference.
Sure. I had a bunch of pizza and talked to a bunch of people.
Sweet. Yeah, it was actually pretty awesome. I met a bunch of people there. Got to catch up with some people that I hadn't seen in a while. Not enough time to catch up with everyone, to be honest, but it was fun.
Cool. Let's move on to events that are coming up.
All right. So this coming week, I thought it was going to be getting, you know, going to get harder and harder to find things happening around town, but we still have quite a bit coming up. And I stumbled upon a new meetup for me anyway that I'd like to check out, but we'll talk about that a little bit later. Monday, we have Vancouver Learns to Code.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit about that, James?
Yeah, this is actually a BrainStation meetup, and it's sort of I guess sort of a, you know, they have a bunch of events this week, and this is like one of the first ones of the week. And so it's basically an introductory web development workshop. And what that means is that they have these, you know, 1 hour, 2 hour sessions with questions and answer periods and, you know, networking events. So they basically, you get in there, you do your networking thing, you learn about BrainStation, all that stuff, and then you actually dive into HTML and CSS. So they actually show you the basics of front-end development in this little meetup here.
Yeah, it seems pretty interesting. It looks like BrainStation, one of the four boot camps that I know of that we have around town, has a lot of events happening this week. So it looks like it's maybe their week to be social and engage with the community. Have you been to any events at BrainStation, James?
I went to a Hacker Nest at BrainStation.
That's the only event I've been there as well. And so I'd really like to see what the culture, what the vibe's like there when we're not hosting our own meetup there, but when we actually go and check it out. So I'd like to go out to one of them. They seem to be having events all week, and they're kicking it off Monday evening, 6:15 to 9 p.m., they have this Vancouver Learns to Code. What I gather from the website is that this is kind of an intro to web development for people who are interested. And, of course, it's free. That's something I wanted to bring up. I see a lot of these ladies, not ladies learning code, that's what comes to mind, but for ladies, you know, particularly, come out and learn this web development thing or learn that. And there's always this fee, like $35 or something to go out. And I wonder why.
I think, I've actually volunteered for Ladies Learning Code a few times, and what they actually do is they provide the lesson plan stuff. So someone actually developed that lesson plan and provides a bunch of assets. So if you're doing the design one, someone made that Photoshop file and, you know, made the lesson to go along with it. So someone did the work to get that done.
And we couldn't get a company to sponsor that or somebody else. We have to charge the community who doesn't know how to code that we're trying to get into code. You can tell I'm pretty opinionated about that. I think it's awful.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm not really sure what they do with the money.
I'd like to see more free events to get people into coding and in and around it. And I personally volunteer my time to build out those assets and to teach and whatever. And I wouldn't mind doing so as well. So if somebody's interested in having a free event helping people to learn to code and they're interested in getting people to do so, feel free to reach out to me. I'd like to help out with that. I could probably even get you sponsors and a place to hold it. And I could also probably conduct it for you.
Ooh, that's nice. If you want to actually volunteer for this BrainStation meetup, you can email Kyle at ktrevlin at brainstation.io.
And we'll have that down in the link, a link to
their
page.
They are accepting volunteers, that's the point.
Oh, that's pretty awesome. Maybe we should go out and volunteer for that.
That would be cool. It's Monday.
All right, so that's Monday. Tuesday, we have a pretty full day as well. What's going on?
Open Coffee.
And what's Open Coffee all about?
Open Coffee. This is my favorite meetup, probably, I think. So Open Coffee is... Oh, wait, this is the Tuesday morning one.
This is one you've never been to. It's a favorite one to talk about.
Actually,
that we
put
have
this
never
on my calendar,
gone
so
to.
I'm going to go this week. I put it on there. I made sure it's there. I'm actually going to go this time. 8 a.m. Monday. Or sorry, 8 a.m. Tuesday. I'm going to make it.
What if it absolutely sucks and we've been talking about it for, like, I don't know, 3 weeks, a month?
I don't think so.
I doubt it. It's probably awesome.
I've got a positive outlook. I'm putting aside my 8 a.m. block on Tuesday, and I'm going to go. I'm going to have fun whether I like it or not.
Awesome. I'm not sure if I am or not. Just putting that out there.
Yeah.
So this other one that I just came across that looks pretty cool, the Vancouver's Dev Book Club. I'm quite interested in this. This is happening Tuesday evening, 6 p.m. at 7 Geese, which is 355 Water Street. I'm going to go and check it out. I haven't actually read the book that they are going to be talking about. I have seen it. I have glanced through it a little bit. Talk about working. They're going to be talking about working effectively with legacy code, the book. And I'm not sure what their schedule's like, but I gather they read books and then meet up to talk about them. And these books are related to development or programming.
Your friend Adam actually suggested this book highly. He just couldn't stop talking about how great it was. So I'm assuming it's a good book. I've heard about it a bunch of times now. So if you're not even going to go, you should check out the book.
Yeah, and James is referring to Adam Dimitrik. So he also runs a couple of meetups and is doing some interesting stuff. We'll have to have him on the podcast sometime. Maybe we'll aim for February.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay, and after that, so Tuesday looks pretty fun. And then we're rolling into Wednesday. So we got that fireside chat with Chris Newman. What can you tell us about that?
So Chris is the chief product officer and founder at Data Hero. Data Hero does analytics and visualizations. Mm-hmm. So they take in your ugly data and they spit it out in a beautiful way. They tell you information about it that you maybe couldn't have gleaned unless you have that sort of background. But his actual session here is a QA session. So he actually talks about how they do this and how he became an entrepreneur, essentially.
So we talked about this a little bit last week, but my question to you is, who should go to this? What would be my takeaway if I go to this? It seems pretty awesome, but it's also during the day, 2 p.m. to 3 p.m.
Yeah.
So how do I justify this to my boss?
I think that you could probably learn about ways to, you know, that Data Hero might help you as a company. So if you're on the side of analytics or something like that, or interested in implementing analytics, or maybe you're gathering analytics and you want to know what to do with that, this might actually, you know, we might be able to talk to Chris and he can probably tell you about how that works within Data Hero.
Mm-hmm.
But also, Data Hero got funded. They got a $6.1 million investment.
And yet they're charging $10 to attend
this.
Oh,
yeah. This one's ticketed. This one's ticketed, boy.
Okay. So that seems all right. And if it's happening during work hours and it has a $10 fee, maybe you can get your boss to pay for it. It does definitely seem worth going to. I'd like to check it out. I don't think I can find the justification for what I do in my day-to-day, though.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah. And then coming after that, so we have another meetup happening at Brain Station. And this one's looks like a lunch and learn. It's from 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. I was actually particularly interested in this because I saw it was somebody from PaySavvy coming out to speak. I've seen a couple people speak from PaySavvy. I can't think of the name of off the top of my head, but he did a talk on microservices, and it was quite good. It was just like an intro to microservices,
mm-hmm.
and it was interesting. Adam was quite the heckler at that. Made it a lot of fun. And we had Mike Martinson talk about JSON API, and that was, I mean, they gave great presentations.
Yeah.
So I'm really looking forward to this. I think I'm going to go out. It's the guy's going to be speaking on Thursday, December 10th from 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. I believe it's their HR or PR manager or something
like that. Yeah, Rocky. Yeah.
And do you know what they're going to be talking about?
From what I can glean from the meetup, they're just really talking about managing people
mm-hmm.
and how that sort of works. Rocky here, his resume is pretty impressive. He has like a decade of experience in this industry. So mm-hmm. I'm sure that, you know, that he's going to be able to tell you a little bit about some of the problems that come up and how to mitigate those.
Yeah, and another way to go up and check out Brain Station. Okay, and then the Hour of Code. So we've got that as well, December 7th to 13th. This Friday, December 11th, I'm actually going to be going out for my first Hour of Code volunteer session.
Mm.
And I look forward to that. I'll let you know how it goes. I'm a little nervous, to be honest. 20 or 25 second graders.
Yeah.
See where that goes.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah. So if you haven't heard of Hour of Code before, we plugged it a few times. It's essentially a one-hour course that people can go to, and they learn how to code. It's children to, you know, the opposite of a child.
They say ages 4 to 104, and, you know, if you're 3 years old, you're out of luck. If you're 105, you're out of luck.
Yep.
You know what? I would definitely make exceptions if you're a three-year-old and you really want to get into code.
Yeah.
I would definitely invite you into my session.
Yeah, and so if you're 105 and you're just trying to pick up that new skill.
Ooh, I don't know about that.
Yeah. Oh,
just kidding.
That's too bad. If you want to volunteer, you can actually sign up. You can go to code.org/volunteer/local. You search for your city, and you can actually volunteer as well. So that covers a few days, December 7th to 13th.
It does. And then on the 12th and 13th, so that's Saturday and Sunday, we've got devfest.ca. I think they have a couple of extra tickets still, maybe. You can get in on that. It's $90 for the two-day weekend workshop. It's 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday and Saturday. It's a pretty busy day, and it'll be going over all types of Google cloud-based stuff.
So I actually have the details here. They do have a 100-seat limit, so if you are thinking of going, you should get right away. I actually checked it this morning to check and see, and they do still have tickets, so hopefully those are still there by, you know, later in the week.
Mm-hmm.
The first day, they're actually doing everything cloud, which includes Compute Engine, App Engine, Kubernetes, managed VMs, all this, the big storage stuff. And the day two is actually they're doing has a thing called Choose Your Own Adventure, which goes into Kubernetes, Firebase, which is a company that Google acquired a few years ago, Go and App Engine, BigQuery. So if you really want to dive into all these different Google services, this sounds like a really good way to do that, especially having like Google people there to help you.
Should be pretty fun, and I believe it includes lunch as well. And that's over at the Hootsuite office on East 8th. And that's about it for this week in meetups and events around town. And we're here on the Vancouver Tech Podcast with our special guest, Chris Nicola of Wealth Bar. And Chris, you also run the Polyglot Social, don't you? Or Polyglot Meetup.
Yeah. Well, I don't run the meetup as much as I'm sort of the person responsible for the social nights. And my wife and I, along with the Tavis and Syme, who run the meetup, organize the conference every year.
Oh, okay. Can you tell us a little bit about the conference?
So the conference is something we started about, I guess it's 4 years back now. Hopefully I've got that right. And originally the idea was I had attended Alt.net down in Seattle at the Microsoft campus, which was an unconference. And it's sort of, I think, one of the second unconference I had gone to. And so we wanted to do an unconference up here in Vancouver. But at the time, I decided I didn't want it to be focused around one particular language or framework. So being able to invite people from the JavaScript community, the Ruby community, Python, and all these other languages to talk about building software seemed more interesting and more appropriate for an unconference style.
And how did the community respond to that at first?
So we were surprised. I mean, when we did this, it was kind of, well, should we do this? Maybe we'll do this. And then at the time, I was working with Boris Mann, who had experience with unconferences, and he's just like, no, you're doing this, and plugged it into Lanyard and set a date and sent out things to people. And we.
So Boris Mann, he's the one behind Vancouver Pixel Crafters Meetup and Fullstack.io. Is that right?
Yeah.
He has an investment company or something too, right?
Yeah. So now he's actually got another startup that he's working with. It's in sort of the wearable devices space, and also doing some augmented reality, and I think playing with virtual reality and stuff like that as well. But yeah, still a big part. Like he's a big community builder around the tech community here. And so he kind of kicked us in the behind to kind of actually do it. And then we started organizing it. And the first time was... way more work than we were expecting.
We had
no idea what we were doing. Mm-hmm. And still, you know, we had over 250 people come out. And,
oh, that's a pretty good turnout.
Yeah.
And then from that, we're now over 300. We don't really have room for more. So we kind of sell out every year at this point.
So where are you having it?
So we usually either have it at SFU or Robson, UBC Robson.
Oh, nice.
And I think next year the plan is still UBC Robson. And then we always do a day before as well. We do tutorials to have a bit of the in-depth sessions as well as kind of the unconference style as well.
Oh, that sounds pretty cool. So when's the next conference coming up? Is this a yearly regular thing?
Or? Yeah, we always do it right around the May long weekend. So it'll be, I think, the week after the May long weekend or before, depending on how the days fall.
Okay, so we'll definitely be announcing something to keep our eyes open for.
Yeah.
Awesome. And so what usually happens at the Polyglot? I know there's hack nights and then there's socials as well. What's the schedule like for that?
So the socials are every first Tuesday of every month, and they sort of just happen automatically. I don't even make it out to most of them these days. I get quite busy with Wealth Bar, but the hack nights are sort of a regular thing that Simon Tavis organized, and there's a couple of other events. Sometimes they will bring a speaker in, sometimes from out of town on a particular subject, and so they'll organize those as speakers are available. And so if there's, you know, if somebody's interested in potentially giving a talk, they can ping us on the meetup or email Syme or Tavis or myself directly, and we'll see if we can find a space for that. And we're not, again, it's not a language-specific thing. We're looking for people who want to talk about technologies or approaches to building software that would be of general interest to people regardless of what language or stack they're familiar with.
Sounds pretty cool. Now, I think you and I first met near the end of one of the Polyglot socials. That's normally at St. Regis?
Yeah.
And what about the Hack Nights? Are they normally hosted at Mozilla? Or?
Yeah, they've been hosted at Mozilla, I think, up until now. And I'm pretty sure they're still going on there. But we keep everything up to date on the meetup. So if if anybody's looking to kind of get involved with Polyglot, they can check out the meetup. And then the other thing which we keep a little bit more under wraps is the reading group for people who kind of want to get into these are often academic papers. Mm-hmm. And then so there's a discussion group. It's a much smaller group. But if you're interested in getting into those papers, and you know, the only requirement being that you actually want to read the papers,
yeah,
which, you know, a lot of people don't have time for, you can talk to Syme or Tavis about participating in that.
Do you find that there's a difference between the people that go to the socials, the hack nights, and these reading nights?
I don't find there's a difference between the people. I think that the reading group just demands a lot more up front of you,
right?
Because these, like one of the papers that they were reading was actually one of the ones I studied in university on information theory. It was Claude Shannon's original paper on information theory, which is kind of the foundation for a lot of what we do in software development. And as well as communications and compression and that kind of thing. So it's pretty, you know, it's a pretty dense paper, and introduces a lot of mathematical concepts. So it's for people who really kind of want to get into that. And then other papers are things like Out of the Tar Pit and that kind of stuff. So you can kind of take a look at what papers are there. And if you're interested in actually reading it and then having somebody to talk about it with or ask questions to, it's a pretty smart group of people. Usually somebody's familiar with the subject matter and can kind of answer questions.
That actually sounds really awesome. Yeah. So how often are those reading meetups?
I think they try to do them again once a month, but it depends on sort of the ambition and availability of people in the group to keep chugging through those papers. I unfortunately haven't had time. I went to the one on the information theory paper only because I had already read it several times.
So right,
I didn't have to put in the upfront investment to show up.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. So maybe we'll talk a little bit about you now, Chris. Tell us a little bit about, you know, where you grew up. Are you originally from Vancouver?
Yeah, I actually grew up in Richmond. Mm-hmm. I was born in Vancouver, but I grew up in Richmond. I don't know if there's a whole lot interesting I can say about growing up in Richmond in the 80s, other than, you know, you spend a lot of time hanging out at Richmond Center in Lansdowne.
Mm-hmm. Maybe listening to Twisted Sister.
Yeah. maybe a little bit of Twisted Sister, after. It was more like Guns N' Roses and Megadeth and Metallica and that kind of thing. But nice. Very similar. Pretty close. So I went there, and then I went to high school at Vancouver College. So then I started spending a lot of time in the city, and went to university out east at Queen's in Kingston, Ontario. Oh. Yeah.
So have you always been in and around the tech scene?
No. Well, I mean, I've always been interested in computers. I started with like my first Tandy something or other, hooked up to a TV with one of those like things that played data from a tape. When I was six or so, and then we had a PC, I think, shortly after that. So I learned a little bit of BASIC at the time. I tried to make a computer program that would talk back to me, and then realized how many if statements that was going to start requiring to have any kind of interesting conversation, and gave up.
So this is like a chatbot you're trying to build?
So this is my first foray into programming, and then I realized it was really tedious work, and being seven at the time, you get bored.
Yeah.
So I didn't do a lot of programming. I was really into games, BBS games. I got into BBSs like late 80s, early 90s, and then I had other kinds of online games after that. So. But not a lot of programming until I got to university. I didn't study computer science specifically. I started in physics and then went into something that Queen's calls applied math. So I studied, called it computing and communication. So a lot of electrical engineering, a bit of computer science, and a lot of math. And so I didn't do a lot of coding then either. Like, I wouldn't call it building software.
Right.
I didn't become familiar with building software until I left university after my master's degree. Realized I needed a job and realized I knew enough code to put together a piece of software on my own. And so I started building software for my dad's company, databases for things like their insurance or a commission accounting system and that kind of stuff. And so I became familiar with the Microsoft tool stack first and then web development after that, and worked for a number of startups in Vancouver. So I came into software pretty late, and that's one of the reasons why I got so involved in the software community. Was I wanted to kind of catch up in my knowledge, because I didn't graduate with a CS degree and didn't kind of start in that community. So I started going to conferences, going to, at the time they weren't really meetups, but going to groups like alt.net and stuff to learn from people who had a lot of experience and try to catch up on that knowledge.
So what was the community like at the time when you first started getting into it?
That was my favorite part of it. I mean, when I first started coding and didn't really know what I was doing, I relied on like IRC channels like everybody does, and then started to become familiar with actual like in-person groups. So moving from those online conversations to actually like sitting down and meeting with people and talking about writing software over beers or going to these conferences, my first conference was DevTeach, and people were talking about things like dependency injection and inversion of control and domain-driven design, how to use ORMs properly, how to structure software, and everything was just going straight over my head. But it blew me away, and these people, they would talk to you. These were people who, up until then, I've been reading their blog posts, people like Oren Enni from website iendi.com was a really prolific blogger in the .NET space. And so he was actually at this conference, and I went to a, a tutorial put on with him, by him, explaining how to use Anhibernate properly. So that's where I learned that I had no idea how to use an ORM, even though I was trying to use it. And so that really accelerated things, actually being able to sit down and work with people. And then that was also where I met Adam Dimitrik as well. And we worked together for a while. And so he really helped jumpstart a lot of my knowledge in the space, helped me actually learn to use Git and use source control properly and apply principles of domain-driven design to the code that I was writing and that kind of thing.
Awesome. So you said you've worked in you spent some time working in a few different startups. Have any of those startups become big things?
So some of them all either already were or already on the way to becoming big things when I joined them. I wasn't, you know, employee number one. I worked for Vision Critical for a while, and I worked for another company here called IQ Metrics. Mm-hmm. I worked for a very small kind of very speculative social network startup, which was kind of just to do something fun and get into the Ruby space, where, again, a group of people I knew said, you know, we've been asked to put this together. Do you want to join us for a bit? And that was right before I got started on WealthBar. And so I said, well, I'm planning this thing with my wife, but it's going to take us a while to figure it out. So I'll come and help you guys build this for a year. And that was also a lot of fun. And I was able to learn a lot about Ruby and just some of the concepts behind building something where people, communicate socially was fun as well. And then now I'm working on WealthBar.
Yeah, so that actually tell us a little bit about WealthBar. Where did the idea come from? So you planned it out with your wife?
Yeah, so we what WealthBar does is we provide people with financial planning and investment advice online. So we basically make it easy for people to plan out their finances, figure out how to save money, how to save efficiently. We provide them with access to a real financial advisor. And then we're also able to invest their money in an efficient and low-cost way that helps keep more of their money in their retirement savings rather than going to advisors or the bank. Mm-hmm. We also do insurance planning and other things like that. And we built it because we noticed so my dad's company, which I built a lot of software for as well, is a wealth management firm here in Vancouver. And so we had our savings kind of set up there, and we were saving for retirement. And what I realized is a lot of my colleagues were getting to that phase where they were saying, I got to start saving for my retirement and planning my future out. What do you do? And you're having that conversation over beers. And so we would explain what we did, and they would say, okay, well, can I go over to Nicola Wealth and ask for help? And Nicola Wealth is a company that by and large is focused on fairly wealthy individuals, as is most wealth managers at the time.
Now with WealthBar, though, I've noticed just kind of glancing at the site, it's free up to $5,000.
Yeah. So we said, the problem here was that, most financial advisors just were unable to work with smaller clients or people who were just starting out. So we said, if we build this and do this online, can we do this in a way that's more efficient and allows these people to kind of access the same kinds of investments, access lower cost investments, and actually be able to start saving their money in a way that's convenient? And also we wanted to build something that was technology driven, even just for ourselves. We like working with technology. I like having instant access to know how my investments are doing and everything else. So we thought, we understand how this space works. I've built a lot of software in this space before. Let's go and do this.
Speaking of technology, what sort of technology stack did you decide to use for your WealthBar?
So we decided to use Ruby. And a big part of the reason that I went with Ruby is just Ruby is a really, and Rails in particular, are a really good technology stack for being able to build something, to build a front end for something very, very quickly. We use a number of other technologies. Obviously, these days, like anything else, we're very JavaScript driven as well. So a huge amount of the user experience is very JavaScript driven. But we take advantage of anything we can with technology to be able to have a fairly small team right now. And then as we grow in complexity, as the software gets more complex, we'll probably branch off into other technology stacks as well to kind of handle a lot of the back end and back office stuff.
Now, is WealthBar currently hiring?
Yeah, we are, although we haven't announced that officially yet. Probably in January we'll have some postings up. But if people are interested, they should definitely come and talk to me or get in touch with us.
What kind of people?
So we've been looking for a community manager for a little while now, so that job is up. But we'll be hiring a senior software developer and user experience in the new year.
Okay, interesting. So can you tell us actually a little bit about the makeup of WealthBar? Who's there and
What are they doing? So we have there's three other software developers other than myself. One of them is actually a Lighthouse Lab grad. So we have people from sort of the junior to senior range as well. We sort of believe in hiring people who are going to learn as a part of our team.
And how's that been going?
It's going really, really well. Yeah, I'm actually really impressed with how well some of the coding camps are able to get people into a position where they can start and hit the ground running and then keep learning. So I can understand that as well, because while I have a background in computer science and electrical engineering and math, I didn't really know how to build software when I started building software. I think that's probably true for most people, because that's not exactly what you learn in university. So this kind of focuses people on what they need to start building programs that people are going to use, and then they can continue to learn ongoing from that point.
Okay, and back to the makeup of the company.
So we also have two people who are specifically focused on financial advice. They're investment managers, chartered investment managers, and we have one here in Vancouver. And one that's actually in Montreal as well, who's French-speaking and provides support to a number of our clients who are in Quebec. My wife as well is licensed in insurance, and we have a portfolio manager who deals with our investment strategies. And then we have an office administrator, a designer who does all of the beautiful design that you see on our website, on our blog, all of our branding and
marketing. Yeah, I've noticed you guys have nice stuff.
Yeah, we do a lot of infographics now. We just did one which compared financial bonds to James Bonds.
Yeah, I saw that one.
And we're doing this is a bit of a spoiler alert, although maybe it'll be out before the podcast is out. But we're doing one which compares Star Wars characters to different kinds of financial advisors. Nice. So the spoiler is Han Solo is the hedge fund guy.
Okay. I wanted to jump back a bit because when I was researching Wealth Bar, I noticed that you actually still contribute to the Wealth Bar code, even though you're a co-founder as well.
Yeah. No, I do a lot of coding still and try to kind of keep involved in that. That's, again, part of having a small team is everybody's kind of into the grind of things on every, like Taya still, as the CEO, still does a lot of financial advice and works directly with clients, for example.
I wanted to ask you about how you balance coding as well as like being an owner, because I know it's a challenge for a lot of founders as their company grows. You can't have your fingers in all the code as much as you could, you know, when you were a small team. How do you balance that?
I mean, I think part of it is just, you know, dedicating a specific amount of time to coding and really wanting to do it. I have Thursdays kind of blocked off largely to work on writing code, and I don't generally schedule any other meetings or anything else there when I don't have to, but I also don't do any other work. And mostly it's about other work. So when you're a founder, especially really early on, you're often taking on responsibilities related to marketing. I wrote a lot of some of our early blog posts and things like that. And the other part of it is realizing as a founder, as you go on, that there's lots of these different jobs that you pick up. Sort of as a generalist, that as you're hiring people, you really want to hire people who will take that entire thing off your plate, and you really want to get your fingers out of that. So I've, you know, anything that's not related to sort of the CTO work or the coding work, when we bring people on board, we kind of, both Tay and I try to make them responsible for things that aren't necessarily our core focus. So for marketing, we brought on an amazing marketing guy, Denny Hollick, who's kind of he just runs everything. I don't touch it anymore. You know, I have conversations with him every once in a while, and he's got it well in hand. And so
nice. You mentioned you wrote quite a few of the blog posts early on. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about the blog? What's it about? Who should read it?
Yeah, so our blog is generally focused on like personal financial advice and tips. So I did one initially just explaining to people the difference between how a TFSA and an RRSP function. And we also have a bit of an infographic that explains that as well. Just so, you know, a lot of people are coming into saving and their own personal finance, realizing how many different things they kind of have to understand right off the bat, like where do I put my money first? And so that's kind of question number one. So we try to deal with those types of questions that our clients who are coming to our website would have right away. We did another one, again, you know, showing the wide range of ages of our clients. So I did an analysis, you know, showing just statistically speaking, what would get you the most money from CPP when you take it, you know, right away at age 60, or you can defer it. And the more you defer it, the higher the payment gets. And so we were just curious if we took like it's kind of macabre, but we took the life expectancy analysis that StatsCan has and kind of calculate out what is the average expected payout that you get for each year. So
I noticed you have a really impressive advisor board. Can you talk about how you sort of built that up? I noticed you have like your, I guess your dad is on there too,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. So, I mean, my, obviously my dad has a long history in the financial industry. He started, very early in when financial advisors and giving financial advice was a very, very new thing, that usually started around kind of insurance and then that's branched off into investments. And now they're a full wealth management company. They have their own funds and things like that. So that's grown for a while. And he's got a lot of experience and is able to give us a lot of advice, both on, as just an entrepreneur on how to grow our business, how to manage our business, how to manage our time, but also, with his experience in the industry. Some of our other advisors on the board were people who actually made investments, like Lance Tracy, who was one of the founders of Pier One Hosting. So he both comes from the tech industry and he's a serial entrepreneur. So again, a lot of experience in sort of advising and works with a lot of startups here as well, other than us, advising startups and startup founders on kind of, you know, the things that they kind of need to know to run their business. We've kind of built these relationships over time where we've gone out and said, okay, well, what is it that we need advice on right now? And who would be, you know, around here locally in Vancouver, the best person for us to work with? And then we also added Howard Atkinson from Toronto. And Howard has just a huge history of experience in the ETF industry, which is that low cost investment strategy that we use in a lot of our investments. So and that just came through, again, relationships we have through our portfolio manager, Neville.
So you actually leveraged your customers and investors as advisors as well.
Yeah, we constantly are, we follow a lot of sort of user driven design patterns. So we're constantly getting feedback from our customers about the experience, about the product. One of the reasons we focused on not being sort of a totally automated robo advisor is kind of the term. One of the reasons we focus so much on giving personalized financial advice and having our financial advisors work with our clients, talk with our clients, you know, even speaking to them on the phone, is that's a great way for us to get feedback from those clients and understand what their problems are, what kind of financial problems they're coming to us with, so that we're always really in tune with what it is they need from both the software and from the human advisors at any point in time. And that helps us build those efficiencies and improve the experience.
So if I want to get started with WealthBar and kind of more for knowledge, building my own personal finances, where should I start? How much do I need to start with?
You can really start with anything. One of the things that we do recommend is sometimes people don't necessarily understand that what we do is focused on long-term savings more than, say, short-term savings or emergency funds or things like that. So you're generally, especially if you're just starting out, you're usually looking to make a monthly commitment, like a certain percentage of your paycheck is now going to be going to your long-term plan, whether that is, you know, maybe not that long-term, like you want to buy a house, or whether that's your retirement plan, and also kind of committing, you're coming to us and we're going to do your financial plan. So we're going to not just, even if your plan is to buy a house first, we're also going to look at, okay, can that get you also to retirement? Like, can we work that in? Can we figure out how after you buy the house, you're actually going to still have enough money to save to get there? And then getting people to kind of commit to that. Some people, it might be too early, or they're still, you know, focused on paying down debt and stuff. And then that's where we might say, okay, well, let's do that plan now. And we have the software and you can use that and do that plan. And then when you're ready to start building up that RRSP or TFSA savings, let's open those accounts and get that started.
Okay. So is WealthBar really a service for personal long-term financial growth?
Yeah. And we expect to work with our clients, you know, over the course of their entire life, dealing with all those major life events. Some of our clients are at that, you know, retirement is happening in the next 5 years point or has already happened. And that's, you know, where we come back into that conversation and say, okay, so how are we going to plan out how you are going to start using that money that you've saved in a way that's efficient, in a way that's not going to cost you a fortune in taxes and things like that.
So does it work in a set it and forget it kind of way, or is there follow-ups and stuff like that?
No,
there's set it and forget it, and there's this other side of continually managing it, right?
Yeah, so from the investment side of things, it's sort of a set it and forget it, in that we don't let people kind of micromanage that. That becomes our responsibility to manage your asset allocation, what you're invested in, and manage the volatility and risk of your portfolio. That's where our experts kind of come in. But we want you to be actively involved in the planning of your future. So every year, there's a follow-up where we sort of review, okay, here's where you're at. Have your goals changed? Have your expectations changed? Did you get a new job? Did you have a child? These things really impact how you might want to save and what kind of financial decisions that you have to make. And so we want to make sure that people keep on top of that, because by having that yearly review, you know, you can make sure that somebody doesn't completely forget about it and then realize 10 years from retirement that they totally missed the mark. So yeah, that's really the most important thing in long-term planning for finance, is realize that you do have to invest a little bit of time on a regular basis to kind of just ensure that you're making those small adjustments each year, so that you don't end up 10 years from retirement having to make a large adjustment or a large sacrifice to kind of get the rest of the way there.
All right, Chris Nicola, thanks very much for being on Vancouver Tech Podcast, and we'll have to catch up with you at either the Polyglot Social or find you online at the YVR Dev. What's your handle there?
I think it's just Chris. On that, you're talking Chris. About the Slack group.
That's right.
Yeah. I think it's just Chris. I've switched all of my handles to just my name these days to try to keep it simple.
Awesome. Well, we'll either catch up with you at Wealth Bar, at the Polyglot Social, or on Slack.
Great.
Thanks for being.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to another episode of
VancouverTechPodcast.ca. That's our site. You can actually email us, too, at show@VancouverTechPodcast.ca.
Or find us in the YVR Dev Slack. I'm at Drew.
I'm at James.
We're almost always online.
You can actually get an invite to YVR Dev Slack if you haven't got one already at yvrdev.herokuapp.com.
See you there.
Bye.